I want to thank first Phil, Tom, Graham, wherever you're hiding, and Colin for yet another fantastic connections and for inviting me to come over and talk about one of the areas that I love, which is analysis and analytical wargaming, being that my background is as an operations research analyst. And despite Phil's, I think it is a wargaming is a OR skill set, but we're not doing very well with it, which we'll talk a little bit about as we go through. Phil's already brought up the notion about the DWAG and the four memos, which a lot of us in the room know about, that really brought wargaming back into focus and reinvigorated it, as many of the memos directed. The question we have right now is, as Peter has mentioned through several of these connections, is we're riding the sine wave on wargaming. You know, the arrow right now still says it's currently on the rise, but the question is for how long will it be on the rise? And we really have a short time window. As Phil's already mentioned, there is already discussion of repurposing for better activities the wargaming funds that we've set aside. So we have a short window of opportunity to demonstrate throughout DoD the utility and value of wargaming. And the specific wargaming we're looking at here, or I'm looking at, is analytical wargaming. A lot of the games that we've seen and we've talked about right now fall into what I would categorize as training or educational, where the players are the focus of the game. And we're trying to impart some skill set, some knowledge to those players. It's not saying that there might not be or cannot be an analytical component to those training and educational games, but the primary focus or the purpose of those games is imparting something to the players. The analytical war games, what we're looking at from there is, it's designed to collect information from the game, from the players, in an attempt to provide some insights or answers into a question that the sponsor is struggling or worrying about. And usually there's some kind of far-reaching, long-term issue that's squishy enough that we don't have a clear focus of what it is. And the war game, analytical war game, has the capability of helping us focus those thoughts. So that's what we're going to be talking about here today, is this notion of analytical wargaming and how we can do these things a little bit better. My background, I'm currently an associate professor in the Defense Analysis Department at the Naval Postgraduate School. My colleague who's sitting in the back, Colonel Jeff Applegate, and I founded the Wargaming Activity Hub about 5 years ago with the express purpose of helping DoD get a better handle on how to design, develop, conduct analytical wargaming. Luckily, I've managed to serve 32 years, and Jeff, 30 years in the Army, but about 40 of that between the two of us has been as operations research analysts, and we've had the pleasure of doing multiple war games. Now, since Jeff has retired, he doesn't look anything like he did when he was in the military. He's put on quite a few more gray hairs. Luckily, though, I can honestly say that since my second lieutenant days, I have not changed whatsoever. Between the two of us in our career, we have over 100 analytical games that we've helped participate in, design, develop, execute. So what we're going to walk through, or I'm going to walk through here for the next 12 and a half minutes, is some of those best and worst practices that we've seen in terms of analytical war game. We have the five phases that we use to teach analytical war game, very similar. It captures all of what the MOD does. We do have analyze at the very tail end of it, but it's not there to say that that's when it occurs. In fact, that's part of the problems we have with war game design, is that the analyst or the OR team is brought in towards the end of anybody trying to put something together. Much like the MOD, we believe that the analysis part, the operational research analyst, should be brought in at the beginning of this process. For it to be successful. So it is a golden thread that streams through every one of our phases for war game creation. So I want to walk through a couple of reasons that we have problems with analytical war games. And we're talking analytical war games specifically. And some of the best practices. So trying to keep with the theme of connections is the how-tos. So we'll go through our observations over those games, some of the things that we've seen to be successful. They're not easy to implement, but seem to be successful in organizing and conducting an analytical war game. The first one is just forming a war game team without the necessary skill sets. Unfortunately, DoD is very good at planning. We're brought up from the moment we're second lieutenants, up until I got out as a colonel, receiving more and more planning education. But when you look at that planning, there is, in every one of our planning processes, an element that says, do a war game. But we do not do it very well, and we'll have some discussions at the end about why that's the case. But what do we find, especially with the work we're doing with a lot of our COCOMs, is that when the three or the five is putting his plan together and he's getting ready to conduct his war game, what usually happens, it's a group around the table running through some kind of scripted exercise or event almost. And as Phil pointed out earlier, it really is nothing more than a box at. And at the end of this box at, they will confirm that their plan that they had already talked about is valid. So we see that a lot. Recognizing this shortcoming, DOD has brought and put analysts in most of the organizations in our eight shops for the most part in an effort to help try to improve this analytical wargaming process. But what we find is while they're now included as part of the project team, they're usually not approached until well into the design process of the wargame, at which point they're asked, we need you to run this wargame for us. One of the issues that we talk to them about is it's not the analyst's job to run the war game. It's you, the sponsor's job with the war game. We're there to help coach design develop from the beginning. But what usually happens because of this break where we go across directorate lines, it's usually turned over to them to run the game. And what we find a lot of times is it's not a very effective game. So what we recommend, and this is what we talk about, is that it is a project team from the beginning. There are a couple of COCOMs, I'll show you a slide here in a moment, who have taken this to heart. In terms of the analysis group and the design group are on the same team, and they're there from the beginning, from when the sponsor first shows up with the question or the problem he has. This works very well. And CENTCOM has taken this to heart. We've worked with them for about 3 years, and they've recognized the importance of this, and they've built out of HIDE a war game cell whose job is to help from the beginning of the planning process, not at the course of action point, to help with the design develop of analytical war games. Unfortunately, this is very much dependent upon the leadership in the organization, and the current leadership is repurposing the individuals that they pulled out to create this the cell. Second one, we talked about this, I think Graham mentioned it on the first day, which he did a very, very good job with, and it's accepting the sponsor's initial objective or question and then moving forward. And this is usually where the war game designers get themselves in trouble when they've gotten the question and they recognize as they go through trying to design a war game for it that the question itself was not very, or was not scoped very well, or was not clear at all. This is the Unified Quest, is one of our Title 10 games, 2005. But if you just read through there, you can begin to quickly look at that, and we recognize it with the Title 10 games, is that it's not a war game anymore. It's a series of events, workshops, war games that lead up to executing this. But this is the kind of guidance that comes out for the war gamer, and if you do not dialogue and scope with the sponsor, then what you end up doing, what you end up having is trying to build a war game, or analytical war game, on a very shaky foundation. And it's not just our Title 10s. Here's one that we're working with an organization a couple of weeks ago. This is the war game scope that came in, and this is the war game they were asked to design and develop. As you quickly take a look at that, you'll recognize that that is not a single war game in there. And in fact, the questions are very vague, very broad-reaching, which in reality, that's what the sponsors are wrestling with. And what we find is going through the analytical war game process, just this notion of starting to have the discussion with the sponsor to scope these problems are beneficial to the sponsor himself. A lot of times they really don't know what it is they want, but they know they need something, and they're asking vague questions because they don't have a good feeling for what it is. So one of our practices we talk to is re-engaging with the sponsor, going to the sponsor, understanding what it is he needs and wants, and then begin to ask the questions in terms of scoping it, believe it or not, just even defining what the sponsor's asking for. And we always like to break out the great philosopher of the Rolling Stones, that if you don't ask, you never know what you're going to get, but you might just get enough of what you want, all right? But in doing this process, what we recommend, which is hard, and we know that because depending on who the sponsor is, you may not ever talk to the sponsor himself. I have some fabulous stories of Chief of Staff of the Army taskings where he said something in jest or joke, but since nobody back re-engaged with him, he never really wanted anything done. But you know how that goes. Staff quickly takes action. So we always try to get three interactions if possible. If not with the sponsor, at least with the staff to re-engage the sponsor. And this whole time, what we're simply just trying to do is understand, what is it that you're asking us to do, and let's get this clear so that we understand it. Believe it or not, even in DOD, when we talk terms, they don't always mean the same to all of us, especially across services. So just even a definitional problem exists. Then we go back to the sponsor to make sure we've heard what he wants, and then we begin to scope down the sponsor's problem. And what we try to, or what we recommend and try to do, is something along the constraints, limitations, and assumptions. If you can go back to the sponsor and begin to indicate to the sponsor the restrictions that he's putting on them, and that restriction can come from a lot in terms of you must use this scenario. What I'll show you in a moment is, you were nowhere near ready to start talking about I must, or this scenario needs to be used. That should come after we've already established the questions we're trying to answer, and then we look for something that will help get us the insights or answers to that. But a lot of times the sponsor may come to you right off the and say, I need you to use scenario X for this war game. I don't really know what it is yet, and it needs to be back here on Friday. And that's generally what happens. So one of the things that we go back through is this notion of the CLAs, and the Naval War College has a fantastic process where they actually assign a contract with the sponsor. We're running through the CLAs to make sure we understand what it is you want, and here's what we say we can deliver for you. And this scoping and this problem definition, what we found, especially at the COCOMs, combatant commands rather, just getting a problem structuring or definition piece done for the commander is usually successful in and of itself. Designing a game without an analysis plan. I'm not going to talk a lot about it because the second speaker is going to talk design analysis plan, but what we find is a lot of analytical organizations or war games do not have a plan. If you remember, the whole point of the analytical war game is to instill insights, answers to questions to help the sponsors overall question or objective. If you do not do this data collection analysis plan, or management plan as we call it, as the foundation of the wargame design. Keep in mind, we're not even talking wargame design yet. We're still trying in the phase of understanding the initiate, if you will, understanding the sponsor's problem, beginning to put together this analytical plan so that we know what questions we need to get answered and where we think we're going to get the answers from. And many times when you start doing this, you find out it's not just a wargame. It'll be a wargame, it'll be a model, it'll be some other tool that has to support it, or it could be multiple wargames. So one of the best practices that we talk about is creating this data collection management plan. Believe it or not, even in the operations research analyst world, there's a lot of analysts who do not understand what a data collection management plan is. So trying to get combatant commands and war game designers to understand what this is a little bit tricky as well. But going into this analysis plan is the measurements place. So once you have this analysis plan filled out or constructed, so you know what it is I'm trying to answer or get insights into, then I can begin building what we call the measurement space, and that's the collection of the scenario, the databases of data you may need to answer it, the methods, models, and tools that might be necessary to answer it. We're a big believer of keep it simple, and I know we've had some great discussions about bringing technology in, but until we have the analysis plan and we have an understanding of what it is that we want to solve, then we'll go out and look for the methods, models, and tools that will enable us to tackle or answer that. And this usually, in many cases, is one of those areas where you'll find the constraints, limitations, and assumptions come into play that will end up guiding some of this methods, models, and tools. The players. How critical are the players to a war game? Very critical. That's exactly right, Graham in the back. As you're going through this analysis plan and starting to get into the design piece, you should already begin to think about who are the players and who are the players I realistically will get into the room. Because as you get into the designing of an analytical war game, the players will drive a lot of the information that you might have to collect up front, might have to drive a lot of the information that you need to give to the players. If we think back to our mega game we played a couple of days ago, being a Yankee coming over in trying to manage the British water and rural whatever system with a job title that nobody could tell me what it was on the British side, much less the American side. I probably needed a little bit, but the game was an icebreaker to recognize, a little bit more information fed to me so I'd understand my role a little bit better in that. But as far as the analyst goes through and putting together the analytic war game, it's critical to understand who these players are. And it's also critical to recognize that you may think you're getting flag officer so-and-so to show up at the game, but he may not actually be there when it comes time to execute the game, and there will always be last-minute substitutes. So we'll talk a little bit later about the contingencies on that, especially if you were counting on the subject matter expert to help answer some of those questions you outlined in your data collection management plan. Conducting a game without ever play testing. How critical is play testing to a war game? That's right. How often should you play test? Always, often. It's one of the things we teach. Jeff has a course where we teach students where in the course of 11 weeks they design, develop an analytical war game. And if it wasn't for the fact that we mandated that you do a play test for me at least once, many of them would go until they think they have the perfect plan and then try to execute on execution day. But in this case, we're not talking about play testing the mechanics of the game. Since this is about analytics, what is it that we want to play test in this game? The data capture mechanism. What I see a lot of times is as designers, we focus so much on the mechanics of how the game's going to play that we don't give that same level of fidelity to the analysis piece and how we plan to collect the data. Phil had a great example of data collection mechanisms, and one of the ones I always hear about are these, I forget what you call them, but the note takers.
Rapporteurs,
thank you. The rapporteurs, that's always a handy go-to. So if you think back to our mega game, how many rapporteurs would I need in that game if keeping in mind that what we're trying to capture are the decisions the players are making and the whys and the hows they're making those decisions. So think about how many rapporteurs you would have needed if that was an analytical game. And I've seen games that size. And Phil's dead on right that we will say we're going to task an organization and the rapporteurs will show up the day before the game knowing nothing, and then we'll hand them a clipboard or a laptop and say, I need you to go collect data. So these guys need to be brought in sooner rather than later, and the play testing needs to also go with these guys. I've seen fantastic games where we will hand the players a paper, a form to fill out, because we like forms, and turn one, the form comes back in and it's beautifully written, full paragraphs, and then by turn three, you're getting one word on that form, and you've lost everything. That's right. So if you get anything back. But that's part of the play testing of how is it that you're expecting to collect data. Same if you have one poor guy whose job is to be there taking notes for the whole thing, and it's a 8 to 10 hour war game. Come the 8 hour mark of the game, how effective is he going to be at collecting the data for you? So the only thing we say, you got to test it. And just like the war game itself, the red teaming of it, we do the same thing here. You got to try to play test your design collection apparatus and play it till it breaks. Failing to plan for contingencies. All right, so part of the data collection management plan is you've outlined all these questions that you want to get answered through the course of playing this war game. What happens when things start to go astray? Which happens a lot. You'll get one dominant player who'll take the game one way or the other that you did not want to go. These are the things that as the analyst who are in charge of the analytical plan need to keep track of where are we at in the progress of answering the questions in our game, and do I now have to, because we've missed something, design an inject to put into the game so that I can get us back on track or get us where we need to go. So much like anything else, this needs to be thought out, or the analytical, this needs to be thought out ahead of time and play tested as well. One of the favorite techniques that we like in DoD is this notion of the parking lot. So while the game is heading, you see this a lot in seminar games, is heading in a direction and somebody starts to take it somewhere you want, and it's the classic, got it's a very important idea, let's park it over here and we'll get back to it if we have the time. But these are the things that you have to think about ahead of time, knowing that they're gonna happen, all right? Now, where does all this knowledge and information come from? So here's one of the issues we still have in DoD. This is the education of the wargaming education, if you will, of operations officer or research officer. This is my career path. So what you see on the right are all the service schools that the U.S. Army sent me to become a better officer. The red ones are the ones they sent me to when I switched over to operations research to become a better operations research analyst. When you look to the left, how many wargame design development courses, knowledge, information did I receive? We're very good at planning. So I've received the MDMP, our planning process jokes for almost my entire 30 years, which has an element that says war game in it. Not once have we ever been taught how to design, develop, execute a war game ourselves. We've just been told war game. And then we get a fancy page or so. Even at the service schools, I would be exposed to war games, but unlike the British right now, we're trying to bring it back. Until I got to CGSC, which was a major course, so mid-career, other than a command post exercise, no true war games were we being exposed to. We're trying to bring that point back. But in many of those games, we were either just a puckster or a bystander, unless you're actually on the planning staff. But again, nothing on the how to design, develop, or execute a war game. Even in my operations research education, you'll see there the entire focus has always been modeling and simulation. Nothing on how to design, develop, and execute a war game. So in our profession, how do you become a master war gamer? It's experience at the units. And in an analytical unit, just because you're in an analytical unit, you may never be in charge of designing and developing a war game. I was lucky to fall on the right brain side, I guess, with the wargaming and the modeling sim guys were across the hall. So I had the advantage, but across most of our analytical agencies, it's a hit or miss on whether that's going to occur. All right, questions?
Let's take all the questions at the end. Thank you.